You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. It's been quite a break, and in that time, we have changed our focus. We are now talking specifically about Korean food and the types that we enjoy. That's the new theme of the podcast going forward, so we hope you're all on board. Sitting with me, as usual, is Alex. Thank you for being here, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
That was a joke. We're not talking about Korean food, but we have been off the air for quite a while, and there is some new strategies coming forth, but I say that stuff all the time. You just hang back, sit back. There will be more episodes to come, and we're going to have some different faces on the show very, very soon. So that's all coming. Also, there's been some changes in the party. Alex, you want to, or I shouldn't say the party, the team maybe is where I should go. You describe it. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah. For those who don't know, my role in the party is executive director of the Libertarian Party in Nevada. And I'm excited to announce that we have three new team members that have joined us since last time we had a podcast recording. And since we're going to a new format with different people, I'm going to try when I come about once a month for podcasts, I'm going to try and bring you some updates from the party in addition. So we have a brand new political director who is awesome. His name is Joseph Hart. He has been helping our candidates get written campaign plans and do this sort of thing. It's really important that we learn how to win elections so that we can start winning them. And what he's doing is he's teaching the candidates what they need to know to build their team and to do fundraising and to do all the things, the field campaign that they need to do to win, or at least satisfy whatever goal they have, right? Maybe that's 1% for them this year because they got 0.5% last time. Maybe that's 51% and they want to win this thing. But whatever their goal, it's exciting to have a new team member focused on what we're focused on, which is on winning elections. And to help with that, we brought on a membership director. His name is Drake Snow, and he is going to be responsible for reaching out to new members. This is really important. Obviously, we want to keep growing the party. We got a shout out in the Las Vegas Sun today for being the only party to grow in Nevada really over the last 2 years. All of the other partisans have decreased in that time by percentage of active and inactive voters. And so I'm really excited about the fact that we're going to be capitalizing on our growth and accelerating it by bringing these new members back into the fold, reaching out to them to say thank you, this sort of thing. And our final addition is Kathy Young. She's stepping up to be our volunteer director. So a lot of you have been asking us over the last 6 months, hey, I want to get involved. How can I help? And I want to apologize that we haven't been able to get back to you in the timely way that we want to. So, you know, the plan going forward is to connect volunteers that are interested through the website with positions in the party or positions on candidate campaigns for the Libertarian Party of Nevada. So we need a lot of help and we need a lot of expertise in a variety of areas. Particularly great would be people who do accounting and treasurer work and can do like FEC filings or state committee filings for candidates. Also would be really big and really important would be anyone who wants to get involved at grassroots and be like a block captain to walk districts, this sort of thing. That's one of the best ways to win elections, and we need a lot of help to do that. So that sounds like you. Early pitch, lpnevada.org/volunteer. Let us know, and we will be contacting you within a couple days now with Kathy on board so that we can get you plugged into the organization, because we're growing like crazy and my goal is to double our leadership team again in the next year.
Wow. Yeah. And if you missed the website, don't even worry about it. We're going to say it again at least a couple more times in this podcast, or you can just rewind, I suppose. We've missed a bunch of things. So speaking of rewinding, let's go back a little bit in time here. And let's talk maybe about North Korea, because that was in the news. It's not right now, but it's one of those topics that we really didn't touch upon what was happening. And for me, there was some really interesting moments. There was a lot of people that were angry with our president. Wow, I mean, that's strange that they'd be upset with our president. And some I think monumental things took place over a very short period of time. You want to lead off on it, or?
I mean, I certainly have my opinions. Why don't you take it off to start, okay. Tyus?
Well, for me, the big one was, so Trump was up in Canada. He left to go meet with the emperor?
the Supreme Czar. Emperor Palpatine of North Korea.
Lord King of North Korea. He went up there. Here's the thing. Korea has scared the heck out of everybody for quite a long time now. You've got a nuclear power, to a degree. Like, it's very hard for them to distribute those nukes, but they've got them. And they're playing with missiles and all of these things. And the real fear is not that they've got weapons, because I'm not afraid that my neighbors have weapons, for example. Like, I arm myself. My neighbors can arm themselves. Really, the fear is that this country's been closed off and pretty terrifying as far as their messaging and the information that they both let in and let out of the country. So it was kind of relieving for me earlier this year when South Korea and North Korea got together, held hands, and crossed the border together. I thought that was a tremendous thing. And then later on, was it last month? Trump went over there and met with him, and he left an important conference that was taking place at the time, and people were criticizing him for kind of leaving Canada and heading to North Korea. But I look at it and I say, you know what? They may be sending criticism his way, but we've not been able to communicate well with this country, and people have been wanting us to go to war with them. And if there's an option where we can open up lines of communication and create a civil discussion with somebody, you know, that should be the goal. It shouldn't be let's go fight and kill everybody on the planet. Even if we don't agree with them politically, even if we don't agree with their philosophy, even if we don't agree with really their policies in any way whatsoever, the best way for us to create understanding is going to be with a handshake and a conversation rather than a missile. So I personally was very, very happy with what I saw as far as communication opening up rather than bombs being dropped.
I mean, I can't really disagree with that. Certainly, we would love to see a diplomatic solution to the North Korea problem. But, I mean, my own personal take, and this may not necessarily align with the Libertarian Party, so just for warning, is that North Korea is not known to be a group that knows how to keep its word. They're a group that has made many promises to many presidents over the last 60 years, and we've seen in each case that they've just been sneakier about it. I don't have any confidence, and again, I think Trump's. I mean, it's a good thing that he tried, right? I'm not going to oppose him on every single thing just 'cause, but I think that that stepping down, that opening up lines of communication is important. But maybe you work through standard, you reestablish diplomatic relations and trade first, and you use our cultural influence and economic influence to take over, sort of an Isaac Asimov style, dominance through economic and cultural power rather than military or diplomatic power. But, he chose diplomacy, and the problem with it is that just, you know, looking at it from our point of view, kind of the master tactician point of view maybe, what we lost is we lost the ability to do military exercises in the off the coast of Korea, in international waters, by the way, not in their waters, and with one of our most important trading partners, South Korea. Right? There are many Americans whose jobs and livelihoods depend upon our trade with South Korea, particularly in electronics. And many of the goods that we have, that you might even be using to listen to this podcast, come from South Korea.
Samsung.
So, yeah, I think even LG, there's a few others probably.
Yeah, LG is huge, too. Yeah. Like, it's much bigger than what you might think LG makes. They don't just do fridges.
Yeah. I mean, I've got, like, TVs by them. I mean, they're everywhere. So South Korea is an extremely important trading partner to the United States economy. And, the fact is that I'm worried that allowing North Korea concessions there might not be the wisest choice to keep trade safe and open with South Korea, that is. Now, again, I still think that exporting our culture and our goods to North Korea would help bring in capital. I trust Coca-Cola to do a much better job of spreading capitalism than any other group, right? Coca-Cola and McDonald's will quit, and Walmart will quickly rickroll whatever they got going on in North Korea, and I'm not at all worried about their ability to compete in the market, right?
I love that.
Right? I mean, let's be honest, right? I trust them a lot more than I trust the government to establish and normalize relations. And if you look at the fall of the Soviet Union, I mean, it was almost kind of a funny thing that, like, people in West Berlin, like Coca-Cola and McDonald's and this sort of thing, were big things, right? You had the advertisements that they were doing at the time, some of them considered some of the best advertising ever done. And, I mean, it was good enough to convince pretty much everyone in the Western world, but even people in the Eastern world, right? What's Coca-Cola? I mean, it was a question that they had to listen to on the radio through these advertisements. This must be the most amazing nectar from the gods, right? And so, not to be on too much of a tangent, but I trust our trade and I trust our cultural influences far more than I trust diplomacy with known, I don't say bad actors, but, you know, people who don't act they're given olive branches many a time and those have been slapped away. And I don't think that giving up military maneuvers in that area is a good idea when what we got in return was really nothing. We didn't get anything of consequence. Now, that's okay. Someone has to back away from the table first, but it normally isn't the superpower, right? It normally isn't the person with thousands of nukes. It's, you know, usually the person that goes, you know, I want to normalize relations. What do I need to do that, right? And then we do it. And I think that that's been very successful with Cuba. I think that, that capitalism has become infectious there. People operating taxis have become more high paid than doctors. There are people who are doctors driving taxis now in Cuba because that's one of the few areas allowed to operate in a free market way. And it's generating huge wealth for those people. So I think that, you know, let's be honest, the free market provides, right? And if we just allowed North Korea to start trading with us, I think that they would very quickly discover that there's a whole world out there that they haven't been exposed to.
Yeah, it's great. Every once in a while you have a conversation with somebody and you walk away with like an interesting little thought, a little tidbit. So when you were saying, you know, Coca-Cola and Walmart and what else?
McDonald's,
yeah. Nike maybe.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, man, if we were to privatize foreign affairs, those are the guys to go with. Like, right. They know what they're doing.
I mean, Coca-Cola is selling what is demonstrably poison to billions of people every year, and they get away with it. I mean,
they're loved.
Like, everyone knows that it's got like 10 times the sugar you're supposed to have in a day per can, but you still drink it.
I want one right now.
Yes, everyone's like thinking back to that moment when they first took a sip, right? Kind of like that commercial you always see where there's like a really hot guy or gal handing it to you.
Yep.
Right? Marketing. It's all about marketing.
This podcast is brought to you by Coca-Cola.
Yes, you're welcome for the free advertising, but I mean,
your sponsorship money. So let's change gears from North Korea to something much more local. This new internet sales tax thing. And when I say new, it's not really new. Technically, legally, I guess we've been required to pay sales tax on the internet, well, since it's been there, since it's been up and running. But you said you had somebody that was involved in this, right?
Yeah. So there's a friend of mine that works for the Tax Foundation in DC, and he helped, I think that they were on the lawsuit that was heard by the Supreme Court, I believe is the case. And the idea was that, you know, the limits placed on internet sales tax had to be real. And it couldn't be things like compelling other states to collect sales tax for some other state. So they had to be, there were limits placed that previously were allowed to be expanded by agencies and states. And those have been rolled back. And so that's a big win because it basically lowers the tax burden. So if you're in a state that doesn't want to collect internet sales tax, another state can't compel you to do that, and then for that other state. I believe that was one of the big pieces of this decision that came through.
But doesn't it also force the online distributors to charge sales tax regardless of whether they have a storefront or not in each state?
I don't know the extent of that opinion, but I do know that you know, it was a mixed bag, right? Some was good, some was bad, and from a libertarian perspective on taxation. And, you know, obviously we'd love to see that be zero, but I think that this opens up the door for states to make it zero if they want to, as opposed to, well, the other states are doing it, so, you know, and they're forcing me to do it, so I might as well force them to. In other words, Nevada might not be interested in a sales tax unless they're being forced to collect it for other states, and then they're going to get back at those states by enforcing a sales tax, yeah, right? So by no longer being compelled to do that, by doing the distributor rule, yes, you have to collect sales tax, but no, it doesn't have to be like for a state that doesn't want to charge.
Yeah. I mean, if my guess is that every state is probably going to charge, because why wouldn't they if given the option? And you can all say it at home with me, taxation is theft. So we all got that. One of the things that I think is interesting about this has been pushed forward really heavily by companies, larger companies, Apple's and Walmart's and things like that, that have retail locations in all 50 states, because they had to charge tax at every single one of those locations. So for them, this is kind of operation as usual. Nothing's really changed for larger companies that were forced to charge sales tax online no matter what. What it does impact is the smaller mom-and-pop situations, which is often the case when it's something that the big companies like. It often is sometimes really challenging for a small business to overcome it. And that's what we might see. But maybe there's going to be some equalization, or perhaps there might be some pushback on taxation, which I'm always in favor of. I'm a big anti-tax guy, because, you know, I'm the anarcho-capitalist in the room. So let's change gears one more time to probably the funnest topic, and one that I have the least amount to say about. Trump has announced that we will be creating the Space Force, which I'm thrilled about the name, really. That's about as far as it goes. I really like the name. I probably should open up a t-shirt shop right now for the Space Force. I guess all I can really comment on, and you might have more to speak of for this, but all I can really comment on is I have no interest in us increasing the military-industrial complex, and I'm concerned that that might be where this could be going. It's probably a great thing for people like Elon Musk and others that have Virgin, who has invested a lot in reusable rocketry to get things up into space. Outside of those companies, I'm not particularly in favor of more violence, more war, and I'm not particularly in favor of greater spending on the military. Maybe it'll create some innovation, as the space race did. So maybe there's some positive stuff there. I'm a proponent of space travel. I just wish it was done on the private side. Do you have any thoughts or takeaways on the Space Force?
I mean, that I agree with you, right? I mean, why? It sounded like we were going to be doing something like $650 billion or something to get it going. I don't remember the exact number. And it's just, I mean, it's going to be more money out of your pocket to go toward what? There's nobody else in space. And it's pretty much international law that there's nobody else in space. And if someone else was going to go to space and we knew about it, we would just go to space before them, right? Like we can, we have. And the fact is that, you know, my understanding is that we've signed international treaties that say we're not allowed to have military forces in space or make claims of space-borne territories, like the moon, for example, or Mars, that space is a resource for humanity to share. And this just seems like not that, right? This seems like, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people sitting around going, I've always wanted to be a starship captain. Well, yeah, but the fact is that we're not an international trade empire, right? And the fact is that if we want to do that, the private sector is the way to go, right? Let's at least get a Mayflower over to Mars first, right? Before we start worrying about conquering it. I mean, the fact is that the Air Force does a great job of keeping us safe in space. I don't see any reason why that would need to be expanded or changed. They monitor all of the satellite data and the sun and all of the things that we really care about to make sure. And between them and NASA, we cover the safety and security aspect that you might expect from a space force. And I don't understand what this thing's going to be doing. And I mean, I don't know about you, but if we want to explore, you know, new galaxies in a Star Trek kind of a way, I'm good with that. But let me do that with my money voluntarily. Let's not take it out of the hands of people living paycheck to paycheck buying food and force them to help pay for it, right? Because, you know, no matter what good comes of the Space Force, and there will be some, right? There'll be some innovation and some things that are good, and people will be employed, and that's, you know, obviously a good thing that people like. But the problem is it won't generate as much growth in the economy as if we kept it in the private sector. If we kept that money in your hands where you can invest it in wealth and you can invest it in industries that you think are important, it would be more important. It'd be more valuable than if the government puts it towards the Space Force and it goes to Raytheon. You know, then we've done pretty much nothing with that money except transfer it from poor people via taxation to the government, where it then gets put into these huge corporations.
Yeah. Whenever I turn on my phone, I've got this image that comes up, and it looks just like kind of static or a very pixelated graphic. But what it is it's called the Pale Blue Dot, if you haven't seen it. And it's a spacecraft that got really, really far, turned around, took a photo, and the Earth is just this little dot out there. And what space has always kind of been to me, besides the fact that we're a part of it, has been, you know what, this is neutral ground. This is about mankind or the fact that we're very, very small and we shouldn't be fighting with each other. And there could be, we could look at ourselves as just this tiny little thing and we all need to work together to make this work. And rather than taking our tribalism and bringing it out to space, it would be really great if we took our unity and brought it here on Earth. So I feel like it's kind of going the wrong direction. But speaking of unity and tribalism, let's move on to the last and probably the most current and controversial stuff going on right now, and that's immigration, which if you haven't been paying attention to the news, here's the real short story of it. 1996 or 97, there was the Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, basically saying that you know, they could separate families, and the children being minors would go through a separate system, and then they'd be deported. But it wasn't really acted upon in any significant numbers. About 20% might have been prosecuted. Recently, Trump has said, "Hey, let's prosecute everybody," and which I totally understand, considering he ran on a platform of building a gigantic wall.
Yeah, this isn't a surprise.
Yeah. So, like, if that's what he's going for, like, nobody should be like, oh, my God, I can't believe he's big on immigration. Like, of course he is. So then they started separating these adults from their minors. And the problem with that becomes when they do get deported, they might be ending up in different areas and not near each other. And they obviously don't have a lot of resources. They probably wouldn't have been trying to illegally come into the United States. So it really does separate families. Then there was videos of kids in cages, which, I mean, that's what prison is, everybody. If you don't know what jail and prisons are, they're where you lock human beings in cages. It's terrible. No matter how you look at it, it's terrible. And on June 20th, Trump signed an executive order saying to keep the families together. So we've kind of actually wrapped the entire story there, but there's a lot of nuance that goes into this because different sides want different things. So, for example, on the more liberal side, they're just like, you know, we want open borders, which technically so do libertarians. And on the more conservative side, they're concerned about, well, they're taking advantage of all this welfare and everything that we're giving out to everybody, and with them coming in, there's also crime that happens. So, for example, I was doing a little research before the podcast, and apparently about 4,300 people are killed each year by illegal immigrants. Now, obviously, there's a lot of people killed by locals too, but these things do cost money, whether it's police or roads or emergency rooms or the court system. All of these things do cost money. These are being paid for from your taxes, and ultimately, an illegal immigrant may not be paying into those taxes, so you shouldn't have to spend your money on things that you didn't agree to. Although, don't get me started on the taxation's a theft thing. We already did that. So we also believe in private property, and So the libertarians fall kind of on both sides of this. And what I think it really boils down to is it's almost impossible to have welfare out there and have open borders without there being conflict between those two ideas. If you didn't have welfare, open the borders up all you want, because you're not giving away anything for free to people that come in and out of the country. And we are a country full of immigrants, built of immigrants. But since we have so much welfare, when you open the borders, suddenly there becomes a major conflict there. And that, I think, is the basis. Now, there's been other arguments that have been very, very interesting, where people have argued that illegal immigrants do happen to vote on the liberal side more, so liberals are actually interested in a greater amount of illegal immigrants coming into the country. Another argument has been that Trump has been wanting to push through some immigration reform, and he's using this to create pressure within the media so that when he writes something, it'll get passed faster. I don't know if either of those things are true, but they're interesting ideas. Alex, what's your take?
I mean, I want to just reiterate that the libertarian position is open borders. Now, that's not saying that tomorrow we're going to open them up, right? There's an idea that we need to do some things to do that in a policy sense, but platform sense, we're open borders, and there's no question about that. And it just comes down to personal freedom and autonomy, right? We don't believe that anyone or any group of people have the right to tell you where you can take yourself. And so long as you're not infringing on others' private property rights, and we don't believe that the government should be allowed to own property, then there is no infringing on borders, right? So in other words, you have a choice. Either the government can own land and they can eminent domain and take your property anytime they want, and they can act like a private buyer and seller. And maybe right now they're technically managing the land, but this is the argument you're making, is that the government really owns your land. You don't actually own any private property. And therefore, they can control who comes on to the big private property of the border, right? But on the other side, what you have is you have a lot more, I would say, logic to, there's a more consistent thought, right? Which is, you have the right, you own yourself, which we believe, and you have the right to take yourself anywhere you want to. And others don't have to let you onto their private property. But if they so choose to, you should be allowed to. And the fact is that migrant workers have been part of the U.S. economy for a long time because they come up from Mexico during our big growing season. So people who live in California and in Arizona understand how necessary this is. There are literally avocado farmers out there begging people to take jobs because there's not enough migrant workers this year. There's avocados basically, in other words, there are farmers losing their livelihoods and jobs, American citizens, because there's not enough people who can legally come here to do the job. And they're not allowed to hire illegal immigrants. Many of them might do that anyway. But the fact is that there's no immigration policy. In other words, the next step from the Libertarian Party would be proposing no border quotas. Right? Because right now, we preferentially treat European countries to the, you know, in our quota system and in Canada over Mexico. Why is that? I mean, both are very important trading partners to us, both in the labor market and in just goods and services. And I do want to maybe push back a little bit on some things Taya said about taxation. So Cato did, and now this is really hard to believe. So believe me, Cato has done a very thorough study. You should go to their website and find it. I don't have the link in front of me because it was really long. But Cato did a study to find out, do immigrants commit more or less crimes? Do immigrants pay more than they take? And the answer is yes to both, right? They commit less crime than American citizens per immigrant, illegal and legal, both considered separately. And then in terms of the money they pay in, they actually pay in more than they take. And the reason is because people forget about property tax in this country. Property tax is one of the largest tax bases in our country. And every person that lives in this country pays property tax, but they might be paying it in the form of rent, right? You pay rent to a landlord who pays property tax. Well, that's paying for education and healthcare in almost every county. And those are the only free services illegal immigrants are allowed to make use of.
Well, roads, police, I mean.
Right. So property taxes generally pay for the majority of roads, police, fire, all the things that are important because local government does all the important stuff. And their main mechanisms of getting revenue is sales tax and property tax. Income tax is block granted from the federal government. That's the one they don't pay into, but they also can't take from. So illegal immigrants can't vote. Illegal immigrants cannot collect welfare or Social Security, but if they make an income that is paid, maybe they have a stolen ID or something like that, and they pay, they're not eligible to pull benefits out. So they, the study went and looked at like 30 years worth of data, illegal and legal immigrants, and essentially they pay into the system more than they take out. So you should be thanking illegal immigrants for increasing our tax base without taking from it more than they use. I trust that the folks that do this for a living at the Cato Institute, which is pretty reputable, they took a look at all the metrics and all of the science and all of the adjusting for different factors to determine this. So, the fact is that they wanted to find out once and for all, is the welfare state a good argument against this? And the answer is no. The answer is the welfare state we have now is not a net payout for illegal immigrants. So therefore, it's not a big deal. Now, if we started allowing them to become citizens immediately and pull from those benefits, that'd be different. And that's mostly the concern that people have, I think. But when I talk about open borders, we're not necessarily saying they can become a citizen tomorrow, right? And maybe some of you would say that. But the next step is ending border quota. So if people want to work and live here, they can. Maybe they're not citizens, but maybe their children are, right? And their children are going to be growing up in our schools, learning, well, really being indoctrinated our way, right? So they're going to know the different, in other words, there's a big term in a lot of cultures that come here called the Americanizing or whitewashing, they call it too. Not necessarily fair, it's not all white people, but American culture is very addictive. People like being American, right? You'll see people of all different shapes, colors, and sizes posting, on 4th of July coming up, they'll be out there with their flags and they'll be, doing fireworks and all kinds of stuff. It's just insane. So I just wanted to point out that in other words, if you're looking at the data, if that's your concern, if you're a data person like me and like Tyus, that's what the data says. The data says that illegal immigrants are not a net pull from the economy, from the welfare state.
Well, for what it's worth, just to push back, because I appreciate a little friendly banter back and forth. Before the podcast, I was doing some research, and I did find in several places that it was saying that it's over $100 billion per year. However, I also want to point this out. There was almost all of these numbers are really, really, really hard to do accurately. One number that I kept coming across was how many illegal immigrants they had in the country. And I was finding that the way they were gathering this information was by calling people up. They're essentially doing a survey. And I can't imagine if you're calling somebody up and being like, hey, are you an illegal immigrant? Like, that you're going to get accurate numbers on something like that. And then based off of those numbers, you're making projections with other stuff. So it's really, really hard to use, by my opinion, the data that's collected off of this stuff to get accurate numbers across the board. So I hate to say it, because numbers would be the way I'd really want to do it. And I don't find a way of gathering solid data. Though I use the murder one specifically, or the homicide statistic, because those ones went through our court system, so that was easier to actually quantify.
Right,
but it becomes really hard outside of that. And I know a lot of people argue, like, well, they're taking our jobs, and it's like, well, if you want to go out and pick fruit, like, go take the job. Like, I don't think that that's really right. The issue, and I think that's really fallen off as one of the main arguing points.
This year, it's been all about just the fundamental right that some people believe they have to force other people not to come into their country, and I don't think that you have that right. I don't think any group should have the right to tell people, no, we don't want any more of those people. I think that's wrong. I think that it's wrong for anyone to say, because there was a time, not so long ago, that people would have said, don't allow the gays into the country, or don't allow blacks. And right now they're saying don't allow brown people and black people in general. Well, that's what we're saying with quotas, right?
Yeah. The issue is everybody seems to be passing laws saying this is what I want, and now we should have a law about it. And everybody's entitled to their own opinion as far as what they want. But as far as passing a law to say I'm going to be able to restrict you, whether that is your freedom of movement, your freedom of speech, your freedom of religion, your freedom of association, all of those are atrocious. And if we continue to... if we continue to say this is public property, then there should be no limitation as far as freedom of movement within that property. Now, if it's private property, that's a different argument, right?
That's a different mechanism entirely. Yeah. But the fact is that we recognize that immigrants, illegal or legal, are a net gain to the economy. And again, do they pull money out in terms of services? Yes, of course they do. What I'm saying is they're a net gain. They pay more in than they take. Do they take $135 billion, perhaps? Yes, but they pay in more, right? I'm just looking at your screen. But,
oh, yeah. I don't know if that's accurate, again.
Right. So again, that's what Cato's numbers were. They were saying, well, hold on. It's not fair just to look at how much they take because they also pay in. And so that's one of the things that you'll have to be very careful about, depending upon what source you look at. If you're looking at a more conservative source, they're not going to talk about the gain, they're the net. They're going to look at how much is pulled out, period, right? And so that is one of the things that it's very important to distinguish. And again, I have to rely upon our friends in the Liberty Movement that work for C3s that have millions of dollars to do this study and this sort of thing. So it's just important for us to look at the data. But regardless of the data, the value is you should be allowed to come to this country, because I would not be here if it wasn't for a more open immigration policy 100 years ago. My dad's family would not have made it here. And so, and all of us can do this, right? We go back 300 years, right? The only real people who have a claim to this land is the Native Americans. And so, I mean,
even that's kind of arguable, considering they were just continually fighting with each other too. Like, I don't think anybody has a claim to this. If you really want to go back, like, Africa's where we started at. Like, sure, we can just start there if we really sure want to trace
and
it back.
And that's the thing, right? That's why all of these arguments are silly, right? Humans should be allowed to go where they please, so long as they don't go on the property that you own. And again, no one's suggesting that we quarter people, right? We force them to quarter immigrants. But the fact is that, there are people who want to come work and live here and become part of America that we're not allowing simply because we reached a quota for their country. And they know that they'll never, ever get on the list.
A friend of mine last night was having this conversation with me. And one of the things he mentioned is, well, you know, at least when immigrants see that we're separating them from their family, it'll be such a deterrent for them to try and come into our country. To which I responded, like, what, should we rip their hands off and, like, beat them over their head with them? Like, how hardcore do you want to get? Let's light everybody on fire so they don't come into our country. Like, I can't put myself in their shoes, but if I were a parent and I had these children and I knew there was no way out of poverty and I knew I might be locked up, but it gives my kids a shot, just a shot. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Easy choice.
Yep, 100%.
Every parent listening, and I'll make one final maybe joust out there, and this is specifically to those who are religious. And I'm not speaking as a libertarian. I'm just speaking as someone who's religious. I don't understand how anyone of any religion, which almost all religions share the central goal of converting others to your religion, right? That's sort of the central thesis of religion is you should join mine. Why wouldn't you want these people here? Are you really saying you'd rather send missionaries to other countries to witness to these people for whatever religion you represent? That seems silly. And even if you're non-religious, right, and you want to convince people that there's nothing out there, and that science is the thing that you should put your faith in this sort of thing. Again, not trying to speak for the non-religious folks. You'd have a better chance of doing that if they were here than if you had to go to other countries to proselytize. So it doesn't make sense to me how, you know, again, personally as a Christian, right, thinking through, right, some of the justifications that we heard from Jeff Sessions about, well, we shouldn't let him in because the Bible says that we shouldn't. It's like, what? I'm pretty sure he said, you know, that it says different things, like go out and witness to people. And I, again, expanding on that thesis, I think all religions share that goal of go out and witness, go out and convert people. That's what religion does. Whether you like religion or not, we can all kind of agree that that's sort of a central thesis to most religions. And the fact is that the majority of America considers themselves religious. So it's kind of an oxymoron for me to see people consider themselves religious, spend tithe money or whatever, personal funds on sponsoring people to go to other countries as missionaries, when they're not willing to let people into their own country to just witness to them here with whatever religion that is, right? That doesn't make sense. It's a logical inconsistency, and it really destroys, I think, a lot of argument. Again, I don't see how you can be someone that goes to your version of church where you're told every weekend or whatever, or whenever you go, that's your central goal. That's your whole reason for existing, right? I mean, if you believe that's your reason for existing, why wouldn't you want those people here? It's easier to get a hold of them and to witness to them with whatever your religion is. I mean, I hopefully you guys are sitting here going, wow, I mean, that's a pretty big logical inconsistency to say, well, I'd rather go to your country to witness. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's the opposite of spreading your religion more quickly. So, I mean, even if that's what your big thing is, and there are probably people listening to this podcast that that's their biggest goal in life is to convert people to their religion, that's okay. That's your freedom of choice to do that. But I'm going to ask you, how does stopping people from coming into your own backyard, so to speak, helping that? How is it hurting? How does it, you know, help you to not have those people where you can reach them more easily? Just something to think about.
Well, I'll take it from the atheist standpoint, as the atheist in the room, and rather than look at it from a political or from a religious standpoint or a political standpoint, I'll look at it from a ethical standpoint or a moral standpoint.
Sure.
And do we have this basic idea of this non-aggression principle? And if you boil it down, it's basically the golden rule: do unto others as you would want done unto you. Right. It's really, really simple. And how simple is it to just say, would I want to be imprisoned for trying to have an opportunity at giving my children a future? Like, do I think that's the right thing to do? Do I think that's the ethical way of acting? And one thing that I love about the Libertarian Party is that we are a party that acts not just for political gain, not out of power. We act out of principle. And that is a really, really powerful place. Now, there's problems with that. If we just acted out of tribalism, we could do what the Democrats and Republicans have done. It's actually really, really difficult to get a lot of people behind you when we say, you know what, we're going to put first, we're going to put our principles first. That's going to come before party. That's really, really difficult. One thing that they asked Donald Trump when he was running was, hey, if a different Republican got elected, would you swear your loyalty to him? The answer is, it should be absolutely not, because my principles might be completely different. I'm not swearing loyalty to somebody just out of their party. I have my beliefs. I have my principles. I'm going to go forward with those principles. If you value the same principles that we are talking about on this show, if you value people having freedom and autonomy and the rights over their own body and property and health and all of that stuff, you know, if those are your values, then you're part of what we're about. And we need that word spread out there. We want you to share your values and then say, you know what? These happen to be the values of libertarians. And that's how we're gonna grow our party. We're not necessarily gonna grow it by going red versus blue, red versus blue. This is not a sport. This is not a game. Like, we're working really, really hard to try and make this country and hopefully eventually this world a better place to live in. If you want to be a part of that, head over to lpnevada.org where you can get involved. And we would love to see you over there, whether that is a donation of time, a donation of money, an email that just says, hey, I'd like to get involved, or a post saying, you know what, this is what I value, this is what I believe, and I'm a libertarian. If you believe the same things, come join us. That's it for today's episode. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.